I'm going to bring in Seth Grossman a little early because I want him to explain something to us, and I really don't understand it, and I read it a couple of times this week. And Seth, I want you to help us here with this question that came up with the ballots. What does it mean, and ballot positioning, ballot Siberia? Can you, I know you have explained it before, but can you really give us the definitive explanation of what this all means?
All right. Well, and if anyone misses this, by the way, I want to mention that our little morning conversations are Saturday morning, Sunday afternoon conversations. If you miss it, it's all posted on the libertyandprosperity.com website. We turn it into a podcast, so you could actually share these conversations with your friends. But one of the things that Liberty and Prosperity has talked about for a long time is that when you hear people say, well, you got to vote in November, voting in November is so important. And then people go to November and they see that, you know, they don't like either candidate. Republicans and Democrats both end up doing the same thing. If only you had a choice in November. And the only way to have a choice in November is to not choose between the lesser of two evils. And a lot of your listeners use the term uniparty to describe this. But it's really the fault of voters who don't pay attention to how you pick the candidates in the first place. In other words, how do the Democrats pick their candidates? How do the Republicans pick their candidates? Well, there's an election in June called the primary election, and you often have a choice between many candidates. But in New Jersey, that system is rigged because if a candidate is not favored by the party bosses, they make sure that the candidates that they pick all appear in one column together with a label, either regular Republican or regular Democrat. And it wouldn't be bad if somebody is who's challenging the establishment pick would vote in the primary election. And if they'd be listed, if their name would be listed next to the person they're running against. But because of the way New Jersey allows the party leaders to pick the, you know, to design the ballot, when I ran against Vince Polistena for a Republican candidate for Senate, state Senate, I was in column F, and the other candidates were in column A. So you couldn't even find me on the ballot. So that's the abuse that was brought to attention when it looked like Governor Murphy was going to buy good ballot positions for his wife, Tammy, when she was running for U.S. Senate against Menendez. And she was being challenged by Andy Kim, the congressman for Ocean County and Burlington County. And he really didn't want to be intimidated, so he took it to federal court, and he got the federal court to throw out the system and say that, you know, the candidates had to appear next to each other and that party leaders would not have the power to banish people to Siberia like they did for me. Now, this only was challenging the county clerks for the Democratic Party. So Andy Kim won that battle. And as soon as he won that battle, Tammy Murphy dropped out of the race. So now it's basically Andy Kim has it unopposed. So what does this do for future candidates? Well, for Democratic candidates, it's an open primary now. So starting, I think it's too late for this primary. The petitions are pretty much all filed and it's all done. But for future primary, if you're a Democrat, the party bosses will not be able to control the ballot the way they do now. However, the judge said that his ruling did not affect Republican candidates. So it's going to be very interesting if Republicans now go to federal court and say, let's throw out the system so we could bring this open primary system to the Republican Party as well. So I don't know if I made it more confusing or less confusing, but, you know, that's the status of the case right now.
Well, what does it mean when you, and you've said this before, ballot Siberia? What does that mean?
Ballot Siberia means that when they design the ballot, you know, they have a drawing for ballot position. And if you're in column A, column B, column C, And if you have column A, you have an advantage, because a lot of voters will walk in the voter booth and they'll just, you know, pick the first candidate they see. And if you're in column B, it's a little bit of a disadvantage, but still voters will see you, and it doesn't make that much of a difference. But if they design the ballot, say you walk into that voting machine and you look at the ballot, or you look at your sample ballot, and you look for column A and you see a bunch of candidates, and you see a column B, you see a bunch of candidates, and then one candidate is stuck all the way on the other side of the ballot, say that don't even notice that person's name is there, they're going to lose a whole lot of votes just because people won't be able to find them on the ballot and won't look that for that person on the ballot. That's what makes it unfair. And that's been going on in New Jersey for years. So the whole reason they have that Republican county convention, and the newspapers and the media really misreport this. It'll say, you know, Republicans choose so-and-so to run for county commissioner, or Republicans choose so-and-so to run for assembly at their convention at in Galloway or at the Linwood Country Club. But that convention doesn't pick the candidate. It just picks the ballot position for the candidate. Who has the good ballot position, and the ones who don't get picked at these conventions by the party leaders are put in such a remote spot in the ballot that they really don't have a chance. And this is not just in Atlanta County, it's all over New Jersey.
So if you're in column F, you're in no man's land.
Yes, you're in Siberia. You're in the middle of nowhere.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I get it.
So in other words, if you're in column B, you're close. If you're in column C, you're close. But if you let the party leaders manipulate the position, that your name just is dangling out there all by itself, and nobody even knows you're running for that office, yeah, that makes it impossible for someone to win, because they have to spend 80% of their campaign money just, you know, trying to show the, you know, the voters how to find you on the ballot, let alone why you're a better candidate.
Oh, boy.
But anyway, they fixed it. And by the way, you don't have this anywhere else in the country. Anywhere else in the country, if you have, like, a race for Senate, you have all the candidates who are running for Senate in one place, all the candidates who are running for governor in another place. They're grouped by the offices that people are running to. But here you have it grouped by party preference, picked by the party leader. So you don't have this anywhere else in America.
Only in New Jersey. Only in New Jersey. Yeah, that's another thing, huh? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So, but again, it's an open system now for Democrats, but Republicans, we have the same old system, unless somebody goes to federal court and gets it to apply to Republicans as well.
Okay. What else is going on?
Well, I mean, all politics is local. So Robert Kennedy may think that Biden is the biggest threat to democracy, but as far as we at Liberty and Prosperity are concerned, lazy, corrupt, and uninformed voters are the greatest threat to democracy. So we do our best to try to get voters to understand the issues, to understand the Constitution, and to understand that corruption by voters is just as bad as corruption by politicians. So if you're going to vote for a candidate because he's going to give you or she's going to give you a free this or a free that someone else has to pay for, you're as corrupt as any corrupt politician you complain about. So let's look at some of the local stories. On Monday, we found out that Stockton University is now in its fourth year of its maple syrup project to make maple syrup commercially feasible in New Jersey. And last year, they used their $1 million grant to produce 22 gallons of maple syrup at $6,227 a gallon. So they proudly announced that they are now did this in the fourth year, but they didn't announce their production figures. So we have no idea how much maple syrup they produced for their $1 million and how, you know, how close they're getting to making it commercially work. By example, in Michigan, they produce the maple syrup for $32 a gallon, and in Vermont, they do it for about $40 or $50 a gallon because the maple trees that produce the sugar need a colder climate. So I'm waiting for Stockton University now to get a $1 million grant to see if we could grow bananas in New Jersey, you know, commercially feasible, or why not grow oranges? I mean, it's stupid, and we laugh about it, but this is why we have the inflation.
Yeah.
Also, the headline of today's Press of Atlantic City, that the Latino Action Network is complaining that Governor Murphy cut their budget from $3.75 million to $1 million this year, and they may not be able to fund their Latino center in Hamilton. And that raises the question, well, why is there any Latino Action Center? In other words, when Liberty and Prosperity, you know, when we have an organization, we have an organization, people pay dues, we have fundraising events to promote the things that we are important. We don't go to tell some politician, well, we're going to get all our people to vote for you if you give us money. That is corruption. And there shouldn't be any money going to any special ethnic or racial or cultural group, because that's not the government's job. Whenever you say we will give you votes and you give us money, that's corruption. There's no way around it. And we have to get away from that. And if you say, well, what's the problem? It's only $1 million here, $1 million there. Well, by the time you pay for the maple syrup at Stockton, by the time you pay for the Latino Center, by the time you give, you know, $20 million to bail out Marty Small to build him a new boardwalk because they didn't save enough money to, you know, replace the boards when they went down, and you pay, you know, $10 million for Wildwood, you do all that stuff, and you're spending $1 trillion more than you're making, what does that do? Well, you have the inflation. And, you know, on the internet and on Facebook, it's been going around. They have an old menu from the White House sub shop from 1963 showing how you could get a White House sub for 35 cents. And you say, oh, yeah, now that same sub costs you $8 or $9. And you say, look at how much inflation we have. But if you remember that, you know, back in the 1960s, we had a silver dollar. And every silver dollar had an ounce of silver in it. So an ounce of silver was worth a dollar. And if you didn't want to have a lot of change in your pocket, you'd have a dollar bill, which was called a silver certificate with a blue seal. And that blue seal, paper dollar, actually said on it that you could go to a bank at any time and trade in your paper dollar for a silver dollar. And each dollar was worth, you know, was an ounce of silver. Well, now silver is $27 an ounce. And if you do the arithmetic, you'll see that, you know, a 35-cent sub in 1960 was basically one-third of a silver dollar. So if silver is at $27 an ounce now, you see that, you know, a $9 sub. So a silver dollar still buys you a sub at the White House or anywhere else.
Yeah.
And if you would do it with a car, remember a car was a Ford Mustang was about $2,000. Now that if you were paying in silver dollars, you'd have $54,000 of today dollars, and you could buy a Ford Mustang right now for maybe $35,000. So a car is actually cheaper if we had real money, but we don't have real money, and that's a real problem.
Oh boy! Now that you put it that way.
but yeah, and some other stuff going on the. Thursday's Press of Atlantic City. They have this section called the 360 section, which talks about national issues. And the headline of the section last Thursday was New York City mosques struggle to help Muslim migrants. And the article goes, above a bodega in New York City's Harlem neighborhood, a mosque congregation hosts iftar, the traditional Islamic end of the fast meal, for hundreds of hungry migrants every night during the holy month of Ramadan. Now, of course, a side note, why is Ramadan holy? It's holy because it celebrates jihad, Muslim victories over kafirs or non-believers, including the Battle of Badr and the conquest of Mecca. But then the article goes on. It says, in the Bronx, an imam has turned the two-story brick residence that houses his mosque into a makeshift overnight shelter for migrants, many of them men from his native Senegal. It says that Islamic institutions in the Big Apple are struggling to keep up with the needs of the city's migrant population, as an increasing number of asylum seekers come from Muslim-majority African countries. So I always thought that when you seek asylum, you're seeking you're being persecuted. So why would Muslim-majority Muslims leave Muslim-majority countries and come to America, which is a non-Muslim country, to seek asylum? Where is this going to take us in 20 years when our grandchildren have children? Of course, if our kids ever get married and have children. But Americans don't think about the future. And when I was teaching at the college, and I was teaching about, you know, our Constitution, talking about doing this for our posterity, and then I found out in my class of 25 people, not one student even knew what the word posterity meant. Because posterity means the people who come after you. And no, Americans don't think about people who come after us. Everything's now and now. But anyway, these Muslim migrants, they get married early. They have lots of children. Many have several wives. Many 60-year-old men marry teenage girls. So it's normal for these Muslim migrant families to have more than a dozen children. And that's what's happening. If you look at the world population, the Muslim population is increasing at twice the rate of any other group in the world. So that gives you a perspective as to what we're dealing with. And that almost brings us to what's going on in Israel. And I think we have to pay attention to Israel, because if we don't start deporting these illegal asylum seekers, everything going on in Israel today is going to be going on in America. And I mentioned that, I think last week, Mark Twain, I had the date wrong. He wrote this book called Innocence Abroad in 1867. And at that time, many Americans visited Palestine after the Civil War. It was part of the Grand Tour of Europe. You'd go to Rome, you'd go to Venice, you'd see the pyramids of Egypt, and you'd go to Palestine and see Jerusalem. And all of them in the 1860s, 1870s, 1880s, they all wrote the same thing. Palestine was a barren, empty land of malaria swamps and deserts, and most Arabs didn't move there until after the Jews drained the malaria, drained the swamps with the malaria, watered the deserts, made electricity from the Jordan River, rebuilt the cities, and planted trees. So in other words, just like Muslim migrants are coming to New York and Paterson, New Jersey, and Dearborn, Michigan, after we built the prosperity here, that's why most of the Arabs moved into to Israel. And it was the same thing. When they came, they have big families, lots of kids, and they don't care about how to support the kids because, you know, Christians and Jews were such civilized humanitarians. We make sure nobody goes hungry and we feed everybody. But the problem in Gaza, since 2005, they've been teaching their children that their main purpose in life is to kill Jews and destroy Israel. So what do we do? The latest tragedy, of course, you had 7 foreign aid food workers were killed in the middle of this war. And why did this happen? Well, it happened because at first the Israelis were, you know, after the Hamas terrorist murdered 1,200 unarmed men, Jewish men, women, and children, they kidnapped 300 others. When the Israeli soldiers went to get those killers were in hospitals, they were in schools, they were in apartment buildings, and when the Israelis shot back, women and children were killed. So Israel changed their tactics. Instead of going after the terrorists, they waited them out. They waited till they got hungry, they waited till they had to go to the bathroom, and then they would kill the terrorists when they left their hiding positions. And so what happened then? Well, then you saw videos of Jews killing unarmed Palestinians, and you saw celebrities like Joe Rogan calling this genocide. Then Hamas stopped giving food to anyone who didn't support them. Now, the solution should have been to stop Hamas from stealing the food. But instead, we sent out these international organizations to deliver food in the middle of a dangerous war zone. And so Hamas wins this war by convincing the world that they're innocent victims, and the more innocent victims get killed, the better for them. I guess what we have to learn from American history, we didn't end our civil war until, you know, the war dragged on for 3 years. we could not have ended slavery in America till we won that war. But we didn't win that war until Abraham Lincoln promoted a general called William Sherman, who said war is hell. People get hurt, people get killed, people suffer in war. So the solution is not to try to make war humanitarian. The solution is to win the war as soon as possible by destroying the ability of the enemy to fight back. And that's what Sherman did in Georgia, as marched through Georgia. And that's what the only way we can win a war here. But if we don't win a war here, if Israel can't win this war, you watch carefully, because everything going on in Israel, the same thing will be going on in New Jersey, in New York, in Michigan. And so this is a world war, and we got to pay attention. On that happy note, at Liberty and Prosperity meets 9:30 every Saturday morning, and I'm late.
Once again, you're late.
You missed the admit this. Everything is going to, I'm sure, within 20 minutes, our conversation right now will be posted on the libertyandprosperity.com website, and I urge everybody to look at it. And if you like it, share it with your friends.
Thank you, Seth. Seth Grossman, libertyandprosperity.com is the website.